things like Confucius and some of those Eastern philosophers and stuff about that. There's so much that is happening now in the world. And then so much of the history we have is because
here we are. Welcome to another episode of the Joe and Doug Show. We have a mission today.
We do.
To get Joe a personal assistant.
Yes, let's do that.
Joe posted he's looking for a personal assistant, and that could be you. That could be you if you're listening or watching. He has lots of exciting stuff going on, and it needs someone to help organize it all so that he doesn't have to pull out any more hair.
Yeah. So the rub is trying to find someone who will like me enough to want to do assistant for me. That's the rub.
Yeah. Yeah. That person is out there, though.
Oh yeah, for sure. Just finding them is the key.
Oh, it's good. And, I love that, Youngstown's beautiful today, which is wonderful. The
60 degrees will do it for
perfect.
You.
Perfect. Yeah.
That's your
if
weather.
I can wear a hoodie and, the sun's out. It's not, you know, it's perfect. How's you did the TEDx conference. We've been kind of bouncing around. You had Mayor from Struthers on last week. I saw you had a couple of cool guests on some of the shows.
The cool thing about TEDx is like next year I'm planning on running their video and being a speaker at TEDx. I threw that out there last time. I felt kind of silly, meaning that like the whole time I'm backstage, I'm kind of going through my head like I should be doing this. I should be out on that stage.
What are you going to talk about?
I don't know. I'm thinking about being a behind the scenes person, an enabler, someone who like makes everybody, you know, irradiate. And so, yeah,
okay.
It's going to go along with the whole theme of me still running backstage to do video and then running back out on stage. That would be so hilarious, you know?
Yeah, that's cool. So, but TEDx went well?
It went well.
Good.
Yeah. You know, and that's the thing I like about the TED movement is that these are regular people who put a very academic discussion in a little 10-minute box. And I love that. That sampling is perfect for how we consume, you know, information now. So,
yeah, I remember, you know, seeing them, I don't know, a decade ago or more and being like, oh, TED, it's kind of fun. It's trendy. It's a little different business way of doing things because at that time, you know, you think 10, 15 years ago, YouTube's kind of just starting to come on the scene in a big way. And you have, you know, social media just starting to really be born. And then they take and kind of ahead of the game, get these little 10-minute snippets of just really, hey, get up there and give us your grand slam idea and knock it out of the park.
It used to be that you had to write a book and then an audio.
Right,
book.
Right.
And then you had to go on like a TEDx stage. And now you can do things like a podcast like this. And that is what's going to be the future. That TEDx or this is going to be the
audio.
Books of the next deal.
Yeah. And people like audio better.
For sure.
It's just
short
true.
Segments too. Like I love to be able to go out. Like I have a playlist of 10 different TEDx talks that I have said, and they're 15 minutes a piece, and each one of them are different. And I can run through them on a Saturday when I'm out doing stuff and get sort of exposure to all 10 of the things that are most important to me without listening to a 2-hour investment into something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So Joe's world, Joe's space, he's got a lot going on. Yes. What is key in this next season for you? What are the things you're trying other than trying to hire a personal assistant? What is some of Joe's keys to success for this next season?
Well, I'm looking through like my deal is when I want to do something new, I have to go back through my life and make it more efficient and harvest extra time to be able to do some stuff. I'm just about out of harvestable time. So there's going to have to be sort of like a dimensional change where I have to create some bandwidth in a, you know, a parallel deal. So it's going to be interesting to see how that comes to fruition. Cloning or
cloning. Well, I mean, yeah, obviously you'll have to shift some things off your plate. I just did a little thing, and I think I mentioned a couple shows ago, you know, 85% of what you can do can be delegated to somebody else.
For sure.
10% can be spent training them, but only 5% really only Joe can do. And so, you know, when I look at and evaluate what needs to come off my plate, I'm like, oh yeah, you know what? I could delegate my emails or my, like you're trying to do with the personal assistant, which I love that. I'm not a fan of that in my own job. So,
But here's the thing though, like in theory, it sounds like you get a person and you can get them stuff, right? Or give them stuff. It's not how it works.
Okay.
It's almost like I'm going to run a sprint. And I know I could do 10-second sprint somewhere and I'm going to hire somebody and they're going to do it in 25 minutes, right? You know, they're going to be bad at it. Like you were bad at it for a period of time and you got to be able to tolerate watching someone be bad at what something you could just do and not go in there and just do it in their stead. Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's the the way people master delegation. It's the only way to scale. You can have control or growth. You take your pick.
Yep.
And, you know, if you want to control everything, you're not going to grow at the speed that you want. If you want to grow, you're not going to get everything done the way you want it done. And so there's a tension in that. Obviously, you have certain, you know, in the corporate world, you have certain brand expectations and certain level of product and service that you're providing for people. So you don't want that to wane. But in the same breath, like, if we're going to open a second store, I can't be in two places at once. If we're going to open another business, I can't be in two places at once. So I have to have somebody that I've delegated that responsibility that's going to do it well and in a way that I'm like, I'm proud of that product still. And some people, that's tough. Do you find that difficult, the delegation side?
That's why this next season is all about me control and, you know, trying to, you know, give things the patience to be able to come to whatever end they're going to be and without me interrupting it and messing it all up.
Do you find when you release things like that in the delegation season that you have to go to a place of apathy on some things? Like,
no, I'm still in the stage where I'm poisoning it, where I'm I am wrestling it and messing it up. So I don't have any good data whether or not if I just leave it alone, it'll be anything because I've jacked it up every time so far.
Yeah, you probably are going to have to string together a couple of those wins where you release it and you're like, all right, I don't care if this blows up. I care, but I don't care if it blows up. You know, like
don't tell me
convincing yourself. And then, oh, that actually worked out. Okay, that wasn't how I would have done it, but it worked.
Yeah.
All right, well, we can trust them something else.
Some of the brain chemicals that I'm trying to harness right now because I'm a, you know, love deep, hate deep kind of a person where the pendulum swings way big in the emotional standpoint. And so I'm trying to minimize it so I don't get too overly excited and too underwhelmed at the same time so that I can be patient through it. And I don't know how I deaden my brain because I'm, you know, so far as an entrepreneur, I've been a high risk, high intensity type of guy.
Sure.
And when things go muted and slow, like, you know, I want to lose interest in it, so I don't pay attention to it. You know,
is that a defense mechanism for you? Like, hey, I'm either going to be all in or all out on you. I'm not gonna sit in the middle.
It's a good question. I don't know if it's defense mechanism. I think that's my version of ADD. Like, it's okay. my intent, you know, or my how I can pay attention to something more.
Sure. Anything. Well, because like, some people are like, well, I'll be all in on this person, and they'll go in. I watch this with people in church. You know, they kind of go from amusement ride to amusement ride relationship wise. Mm-hmm. And so they'll get on that ride like, oh, this is kind of nice. I'm getting some feedback. And they'll go all in. And then it's like, all right, well, I've rode this ride a few times and oh, here along comes the new shiny ride. And so some people do it in year cycle. Some people, you know, jump back and forth between relationships. And it's just an interesting thing. And I see that even with leaders in business, they'll get a new employee and that employee is like,
the best.
Yeah, the shiny, you know, and all the other employees are like, I've been here for 10 years working for you. Yeah, and this guy comes and he floats around on clouds and you have that tension that you kind of live in because, you know, realistically, yeah, new has an aura to it. New has a draw to it. But, you know, in reality, all in and all out people, it can be tough. And to go back to something we've talked about previous shows, you know, your big thrust to be more relational, more connecting with people. It's a challenge to be all in or all out with people. Most people live in that middle space, which is probably why that relational side is a challenge.
Yeah. And, you know, I am super competitive and intense. So it's always been a Joe versus Joe game. So I have to take relational things and force it through the Joe versus Joe. So I'll take responsibility for misgivings and things that happen to figure out how I can do something better to make it go better. And we talk about relational things. Sometimes people just suck and they're getting in your way and whatever.
No. Yeah, that's the truth. You know, as I'm looking at, you know, summer's coming up and, you know, the weather gets nicer and all of that, Gus is going to come back out, which I know is going to be a good thing for Joe's mental health and everything else. You know, but you're already talking about a packed schedule. So how do you create margin in that? I know it's a topic we've addressed numerous times on the show, but you're looking at going, I need a personal assistant because I don't have enough time unless I can clone myself. So how do I go on vacation?
Yeah. And so that's probably where I'm at my worst, is because I love going on vacation for like the first 30 seconds. But once I'm somewhere, I want to do something productive. Right. So it's an excuse to take some uncompressed, inefficient time and convert it into something where I can do some business while I'm out, you know, in the field. I've been threatening to do that since day one that I bought this, where when I roll into town, I want it to be, yes, so I can go hang out on the beach and get some sun, but also I'm showing up at the, you know, the outdoor arena and doing some stage stuff.
Yeah. No, I think that, you know, the flexibility that our world creates right now, like you're talking about being able to just drive into town and record a show and then go speak there and then, you know, have a mojito on the beach is like, you know, right. Joe's ideal kind of space. But it's really what the world's created. My sister-in-law and brother-in-law were just with us for 2 weeks, is why we didn't have a show last Thursday. They were in town and they've been here. She flew in because they both work remotely. I think her company's like in Portland and his company is, somewhere in Chicago or Indianapolis, something like that. I don't know. But, you know, they both work remotely. So they get on their computer whenever. They have two little kids and they've been working to find childcare that wouldn't cost them an arm and a leg. And my wife and my sister-in-law were talking the one day because she just took this job. And Sam kept going, just box the kids up and mail them to me. Like, we'll watch them. She's like, I'm home. You know, our kids are in school. And so, yeah, I can absolutely help watch the kids. And after like a day or two, they were like, you know what? That kind of makes sense because we don't have any childcare lined up for 2 weeks. So they were able to just get on a plane, fly in. They were able to work during the day. Sam was able to watch the kids. You know, our kids got to hang out for 2 weeks. And Andy, my brother-in-law, only came in the last couple days because they had a basement remodel, a couple things they were doing at their house. But the world we live in is so flexible. I mean, you don't even have to have a personal assistant that lives here in Youngstown.
Can be anywhere.
Can be anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, in that sense. And so I think that that's going to be a crucial part of the next season. Even the church is dealing with this. Like, you know, you have people with the remote services and stuff like that. People like that's become some of their church space, like 20%, they're saying 20-25% are just never going to come back to in-person services, right, except for maybe Christmas and Easter or whatever. But they're watching every week, they're giving, they're, you know, there's certain projects they might show up and support, but they're just in that space. And it's a weird thing because you're like, how does that work? But it sort of works in our world and the flexibility. I just saw a church recently launched a campus on the metaverse. They have like a metaverse campus and I'm not sure how I feel about it all yet, but they're the second or third one that I've seen. And they did a big launch and they had this whole video thing and they were like, I'm like, interesting. I wonder how that's going to go and what, and I'm sure it will. And I, you know, some people will be sitting on the sidelines saying, you know, can't be. And other people will be like, you know, we're going to continue to push the limits and it'll have its good things and its bad things, just like every, you know, kind of mode and mechanism that we use. But as you look at the changing landscape of business and Joe wants to go remote, that's going to require a ton more delegation on your part. So how do you navigate that in your head? Who runs the studio? Who steps in, you know, Youngstown Computers, and you've got so many different things. Who runs Deb's shop? Well, she's gone. So how does that work?
All right. So I make about 100 requests per week.
Okay.
Of those requests, there's some weeks that I get zero return on those requests. And this could be messaging someone in the blind, try to set something up. I have all of these open things that I try to have set up. And most of them are either a no. And that's a good one. When someone says no, that's good. Most of them just don't ever respond and they just go into the ether. And so the volume is the number of people that I have to contact in order to get a one or a two, right, is off the charts right now. It used to be I can send 20 requests to get some guests lined up and I get one out of the 20. The ratios were good. Now I'm in the hundreds to be able to pull out somebody to give me a yes, because just like your options are becoming more plentiful and open and everybody's busier, so is everybody else's. And think about it right now. Everybody's at the dance and everybody is spoken for at this point. So you got to be really good and really on your game, because just going up and asking someone's going to say, I already got a dance partner. Right. And so that's what you're fighting with. I know that there's a person out there that can run the studio and that can run the shop and could be a total stand-in. I don't know that I know them, have met them, and I don't even know where they're at right now, but I am dancing furiously so that I might accidentally come in contact with that person. So what are my odds? It's like these exponential negative numbers up to right now.
Interesting. Is that partly because the job market's so plentiful right now? You know, there's I don't know how many unfilled jobs right now.
No, I really don't think it is. I think it's because everybody, when things were normal, everybody sort of had their stuff figured out, right? All the ants were marching in their lines and they were doing their jobs, even what they were doing. Everybody came around the anthill and they shook it real good, right? And so everybody's not even found where they were supposed to be, or let alone where they're going to be right now. So I think it's half haven't decided. Half of it's like, I didn't know I had a choice. And the other ones are like, oh, I found where I was supposed to be, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with that. And I've had a couple people even recently that have just been coaching through some transition seasons for themselves that were like, well, you know, I have this opportunity and, you know, it's going to be more money for my family, but means I might have to move or I might have to, and helping people kind of journey those steps going, all right, you know, you got to weigh out some options. You got to, you know, sometimes I feel like what I do is kind of simplistic in the sense that every move and job we've made, Sam and I've just approached it and be like, all right, Lord, you know, where do you want us to be? And it sounds hyper spiritual, but it's very simple, and God orders those steps. And we went from South Jersey to North Jersey to Ohio. And, you know, I just try and live my life with, hey, my hands are open. So if God wants to give me blessings and he wants to take people in, put people out, we can do that. But I've had these people that are trying to figure out, you know, they've had opportunities they weren't anticipating come their way. And they're going, well, I want to say yes to that, but it's going to shake up my anthill.
Yes.
And I don't know if I'll like the anthill once it settles again. Like,
well, how many times that happened to you where you decided to go back to where you were before?
Like,
barely anybody makes that choice of a second time.
No, yeah, absolutely. I think given the ability to take an opportunity, for me, I'm yes and amen, you know, 99.9% of the time.
Take 1,000 couples and say, hey, all 1,000 of you, you're going to break up for 1 month and let's get back together and see who's still a couple again. See what happens. That's the kind of thing, like you get a lot of things to do and you can go over here and, you know, court different things. I would say about 50% get back together and 50% like, this is the break that I needed.
Interesting. Yeah. Because you get into those routines where you're overly familiar. You get into the spot where, like, well, this is what we do. And then along comes, you know, another relationship. Along comes another option. Along comes another job. And you go, wait a second, this can be different. And a lot of times we're not even considering the different. And, you know, like you're talking about, like, hey, in this next season, I got to learn to delegate. But it's not really just about delegating so Joe can get more stuff done. This is about delegating so Joe can take the opportunity that Joe's wanted to take to be able to have flexibility. Yeah, because on my
tool belt, there's a place for it, but I don't have that tool. Like, I don't know how to do it. So this isn't about doing it. It's a learning that it what it even looks like and what it feels like to be on my hip.
Well, you got a 3D printer back there, man. Let's go.
I wish, man. If I could just conjure this stuff up, amazing.
Speaking of 3D printers, total side note, but my daughter started her technology section for school. And they're going to do several things. But one of the things she came home, she was super excited about. She goes, we get to print something on the 3D printer at school. And so it's actually Aaron's wife, Carrie, is her teacher. So we were texting the other day. Charlotte is pumped for technology. Nice. So I think that'll be really cool. Stir some stuff up. But it's true. If we could just go to a 3D printer and print what we needed, everybody would. But some of this stuff is about, this is going to be a little corny, but it's going to the 3D printer of your heart and your mind. Did you see what I did there?
I got
to
give you a sad drop.
No, but you're creating the tool internally and you're learning a new skill. You got to go find somebody who does it well. You got to go find a book. You got to go find that space.
All right. I got a question since you cited this, I got to get some guidance from you on this. So you basically said there's certain things in your life that you say, I'm going to give this up, submit to it, and I'm just going to follow whatever you are.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I tell Debbie on a regular basis that they're, you know, if you're faithful in that way, you know, you let go of the wheel, and as long as you don't try to tug it back, it'll go straight where you need it to go.
Right.
But you can't do that with all of your things. You can't just say, no matter what, I'm not going to be in the driver's seat. I'm just going to let everything happen to random. So how do you decide which ones are the ones you're just going to let fly and which ones are your decision? And
there's two things I would say here, and both of these are going to sound very pastoral, but there's a word in the Bible that's called discernment. And it's the idea of not just understanding what's being presented, but I'm understanding what's behind what's being presented. So it's you meet somebody and they may appear very nice and they may interview well and you may, oh, hi, but I'm understanding there's a layer behind them. I'm discerning something that's not being said at the table. So I'm seeing some of the quote unquote, the hidden things. And we have those intuitions, right? We feel people and we just say, I don't get it. We just, we just connect, and we don't have a word for it, but there's it's a discernment, right? You know, the Bible says the deep calls out the deep. There's a spiritual element to it. The other thing that I often tell people in those transition moments, what I've been coaching a couple people through, is like, here's the deal. Like, don't we overemphasize our ability to hear versus God's ability to speak. Like, if he needs to, he'll set a bush on fire in the middle of the desert to get your attention. And so many people are like, well, what if I miss it? What if I do the wrong thing? And we get caught up in the what if game with that. So for me, I know that if he wants to do something, it is going to be abundantly clear. Like, there's not going to be like, well, I wonder if he's doing, like, I've never had a maybe moment. They've all been like, boop, boop, boop. Like, it's gotten my attention. And if I try and steer he right back there, I'm going, okay, you don't want me to miss that. Got it. You know, because there's never an example in the Bible where someone accidentally disobeyed God. Right. Everybody was given specific instructions. Jonah, you're going to go to Nineveh and you're going to preach. And he's like, I'm headed in the exact opposite direction. Like, it was not, he wasn't like, well, you know, I didn't really get that email. I wasn't sure.
Oh,
like,
I misinterpreted.
Right. It was abundantly clear in that regard. And he made a decision in his heart. And I find that to be true across the board. Most people, even in those transition moments, where they're unsure, they're just trying to convince themselves to do something that they're not supposed to. 9 times out of 10. And you're listening to them and I'm like, are you trying to talk yourself into this? Well, yeah, but then this happened and that happened. I'm like, okay. If this was, you know, divine intervention, as I would call it, like, your steps are going to be ordered. Like, this is going to come to pass. You don't have to convince yourself. You don't have to manipulate this. You don't have to fight this. It's going to, the wheel's going to be greased. And so those are the things I'm looking for. You know, it will be abundantly clear. I will have a choice to obey or disobey, and I will always follow the peace. Like, the Bible talks about the spirit of a man is like a lamp to his body. And so you can tell, I don't know, inside, like, I know when I'm discontent and I know when I'm content. I know when there's peace. And so I can remember being in high school, going to a party or a place I wasn't supposed to be. And I had this overwhelming sense of not fear, but I knew I wasn't supposed to be there. I was discontent. And I can remember calling my mom to come pick me up, and people, you know, gave me a hard time. Oh, you know, you're not going to stay. And then the police showed up and people got arrested, you know, like that sort of stuff. Right. And it's like, you know, those little hints. And the more you listen to those, I think the more they reveal themselves to you. You know, you reproduce what you celebrate and what you give space to. So,
all right. So that's people like you and I. Our default mode is go, yeah, right? And so we have to determine not to do when we think that we're getting instruction from someone outside of us. What about the personality types that are stopped by default and they need prodding in order to do? With Ryan, I tell him that, like, there's two types of races, and there are rolling starts where everybody's moving already and it's just a matter of making you move more than you already are. And there's stop starts where you're at a dead stop and you need some kind of green flag to make you do something.
Yeah. There's certainly those personalities that, they're just slow. And realistically, God knows how to speak their language just as much as he knows how to speak mine. And he'll, you know, there's a story in the Bible, this guy Gideon, and God comes to him and says, hey, I'm going to use you and you're going to lead Israel to triumph over this battle, to give short version. And Gideon's like, me? I'm the least in my family. I'm the youngest. Like, who's going to follow me, essentially? And Lord's like, you know, I'm going to be with you, et cetera, et cetera. So Gideon's like, well, we'll see about that. So I'm going to, it's the whole idea. I'm sure you've heard the expression, you know, you lay a fleece out or whatever. You'll hear sometimes people say that in church. Well, Gideon took a fleece that he had and he laid it out and he said, Lord, if you want me to do this, I want the fleece to be wet and the ground to be dry when I wake up tomorrow. And he woke up and the fleece was wet and the ground was dry. And he goes, all right, Lord, don't be angry with me. But tonight, I want the ground to be wet and the fleece to be dry. And it was, and so on. And the story goes. But, you know, I don't think for a minute that God is interrupted with his plans with either personality type. He knows that some people are going to need that extra assurance and sign, and he knows how to massage that and speak that. You know, there's certain things for me that, you know, some people are like, oh, you know, God speaks to me in dreams all the time. I can count on one hand how many times where I've had tons of dreams, but where I'm like, I woke up and I knew that God was trying to speak to me in that way. And I wrote it down. And some of them I'm like, I don't even know what that is. But when I look at those things, some people are like, oh, you know, God talks to me in dreams all the time. And I'm like, but that may be their language, that he just knows how to speak to them that way. Where for other people, it's like, man, this situation lined up, this circumstance, and I saw this piece and I just knew I was supposed to do it. And they can't tell you why, but man, I ran into this person. I hadn't talked to this person in 20 years and they reached out to me on the phone. And I knew when they reached out that God wanted me to do this thing. And again, it's one of those things that's kind of the internal wiring, like meeting somebody and being like, man, we just connect. I don't know what it is. And so when you're looking at those, do I delegate that? Do I do that? Do I not do that? And you're trying to make those decisions. That's where that discernment comes in. And you have to be comfortable in your own skin, because we are great at manipulating ourselves. Mm. We will justify ourselves into stupid stuff. And it's why the Bible says the human heart is deceitfully wicked above all things. Like, we will lie to ourselves to get us to do something that we're not supposed to do. So I mean, I see it with my kids all the time. They're like, well, you know, if I did that, I'm like, no, you know, you're not supposed to do that. And they're trying to take themselves three steps in to do it. And that's our natural wiring, is to go after some of those things that aren't necessarily inherently good for us. That's why we choose some of the stupid stuff that we do, and we end up in some of the places we end up. And so learning yourself and knowing, you know what, this is Doug. Doug really wants this. Like, this would be really cool for Doug, but this is probably not really what God wants me to do. Like, it's like the guy trying to convince God that he, you know, if you let me win the lottery, I'll do all these things. And it's like, actually, it'll destroy you. You think it's a good thing. And so, you know, all right, God, let me win the lottery. If I got $20 million, I would do this, this, and this. And it's like, no, if you got $20 million, you'd go bankrupt. You wouldn't pay your taxes, like all this sort of stuff. You would mismanage it, because if you could manage it, you'd have it.
Exactly.
So, right. Yeah.
Let me go on left field on you real quick. So, in an example, just went out of my freaking head. That happens all the time on this show.
Grab it.
But anyway, I was talking, or I was listening to Jed this weekend, yeah, and he was talking about how he doesn't get spoken to directly, but his wife does.
Yeah.
I know what I was going to say. So it's weird about human beings that we want every thing that's said and thing that's done to be customized for us, right?
Sure.
We want it to be like, if we go in on Marketplace and find out, hey, I'm selling this article of clothing for $2,000, mm-hmm, you're going to get one person to say, oh, okay, cool, we got $10,000. And somebody's like, $2,000? I can't afford that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's like the ones that aren't for us offend us for some reason. Instead of waiting around for how you're spoken to, you get a little pissed off that, you know, why does Allie get spoken to? That's way easier. Why do I have to discern dreams, right?
Right. No, yeah. And it's true. And I think, There's a scripture verse, Joe. We haven't hit that button yet.
Thank you.
I've alluded to a bunch of scripture, but it's in the Psalms where it says, it's the glory of the Lord to conceal a matter, and it's the glory of kings to seek it out. And it's this idea that some things God keeps concealed from us because he wants our pursuit. He wants us to, there's something in the journey and the pursuit that we're going to learn in order for us to actually have the thing that he wants us to have at the end of the rainbow, if you will. It's the lottery illustration, right? So if he just gives us the $20 million, we're not going to have had the pursuit or the time or the sacrifice to get the $20 million. And so the majority of people are going to mismanage that, end up worse off than they were in the first place, where somebody that has had the process of 20 years in business and worked really hard, and then, man, you know what, it's time, and they sell off a business, and then they get the $20 million. They're going to know what to do with that because they've had this pursuit. When I look at stuff like that, yeah, there are those times where I think God is more direct than other times, but realistically, I love the pursuit and watching him weave together the things that he wants to do. Cause then hindsight for me, if it's always the same way and always that sort of stuff, I always get in the spot where I'm a little skeptical. I'm like, well, was that just me? You know, because I wanted that. And I was like, well, the Lord told me, and you know, that's what we're going to do. But when I can go back and I go, you know, this person showed up and told me this, and there's no way they could have known this. And then I ran into this person, I haven't talked to them in 10 years, and they use the exact verbiage I was using in my prayers when we talked about this. So like, you start weaving together some of those things. I think the pursuit and having some of it concealed at the end actually gives me more confidence that I heard from God. I don't know if that makes sense.
Okay. You want to try to make an interpretation for me on the fly? And,
sure.
And if it doesn't go well, I'll just edit it out. So it's all so that a post on Facebook about loss and theft. I, especially in the early part of my career, I was stolen from a lot, and it bothered me a lot because I didn't have a whole lot to start with. And being stolen from regularly was terrible. And I had that agreement with God that it would always be provided way beyond what anybody could ever steal from me. And what somebody had said on that same thread was, well, you know, how do you know that that theft wasn't an answer to someone else's prayers? Right. And my response was that, you know, I'm a steward already. If asked, I would give it in a heartbeat. So it doesn't have to be stolen. Sure. So that portion of it for me is that I have to almost feel that pain as somehow getting me ready for something and trying to figure out like what that getting ready for. But the problem is I've given into that already. So when I'm stolen from, there's no more pain. So I'm kind of like submitting into it without feeling pain. So it's really not doing anything. So I almost feel like I walked up to the cliff and I know I'm there and I know what's supposed to happen. But I don't know what's next. So what's your interpretation?
Well, I think the other side of it is it's a much broader picture than just Joe. So like, yeah, that person saying that, you know, it could have been the answer to somebody else's prayer. It could also be a lesson that somebody else needs to learn. You know, I think about, you know, you watch people take the shortcut, right? You know, there's always that sense with some people like, well, that's not fair. I watch it with my kids all the time. Like, why does Charlotte get to stay up an extra hour? And why does everybody wants that fairness? And I'm like, hold on a second. Like, Graham, you're different than Charlotte. Ben, you're different than Graham. Like, you guys all need different things. If I give you all the same thing, you actually won't be happy with me. And so, yeah, Charlotte can stay up later because she's a little older and she's able to get up in the morning. Graham, if we let you stay up later, you would still be in bed at 10 o'clock. Like, you need different than they do. I don't know why God wired your body to be sleepy, but it just is. And I know it's a silly and a small example, but each of my kids needs different things. And so when you look at something like that, where you're going, you know, I keep getting stolen from, the pain isn't always the purpose. I think it's a large part. I think it's probably the big sign for people, but sometimes it's really about, well, Joe has this and, you know, so-and-so stepped in and did this, but God's been trying to work something out for them and he's going to use this because Joe's going to keep trucking along and do his thing. So there's that part. I don't know if you've ever read the story of Job. It's one of those stories that bothers me in the Bible. Yeah, I'll just be honest with you.
It's just mean.
It just bothers the snot out of me. Cause you know, essentially the basics of the story, Job is this righteous and upright guy. He's got, you know, a ton of kids. He's a successful dude. He's got livestock and money and all of this. And, Satan goes before God and, God says, hey, you see my buddy Job down there? He's pretty awesome. And Satan's like, well, of course he's awesome. You blessed him with all this stuff and da 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 da. Of course he worships you. You know, you take care of him. Pull your hand back and, you know, well, surely he'll curse you to your face, I think, is what Satan says to God. And then God goes, fine. He goes, you can take anything that he has, but, you know, on the man himself and, you know, don't touch anything. And so all sorts of calamity comes as businesses, fire, all different stuff. And each time, like one person escapes to tell Job, like, hey, everything over here, you lost it. you know, Job, his wife comes to him. There's an interesting interaction, I think it's in chapter 3, but Job's wife says, comes to him, it's like, curse God and die. You know, she's like, this sucks, basically. and Job makes this, the, you know, real famous statement. You probably heard it at funerals, where he says, you know, naked I came into this world and naked I'll leave it. You know, so all this stuff that was destroyed, as heartbroken as I am, he says, you know, but still my heart will say, blessed be the name of the Lord. I'm not going to curse God in the midst of, you know, he was gracious enough to allow me to accumulate all this stuff. And obviously there's something in this or some sort of pain point that I'm going to learn and grow. And then, you know, Satan goes back and is like, listen, skin for skin. Anybody will do anything to save their own hide. And he goes, fine, you can destroy whatever you want, but of the man's life, you have to spare it. And so, you know, his kids die, all that sort of stuff. And Job's basically left with these boils and he's just in a horrible shape and his four buddies show up and just rake him over the coals for the next, I don't know, 30 chapters or so. And at the end of the story, God restores everything. And that story always bothers me because I'm like, here's Job like doing all the right things. And God's like, okay, we're going to put the man to the test. And he passes the test. You know, the Bible actually says in all these things, Job didn't sin. And it's a very confounding book for a lot of people in that sense. I love chapter 38 through 40 because God shows up and speaks out of a storm and kind of lays Job and his friends out, and he's just like, you know, where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Where were you when I told the waves they can come this far and no further? Where were you when the stars sang together in the morning and I created everything? And it's beautiful, poetic, you know, kind of like, wow, God's really big and he can do what he wants, you know, kind of element to it. And then in the end of that, you know, God says, Job, I'm going to question you. You're going to answer me. And I love Job's response. He goes, I just put my hand over my mouth. I have nothing to say. because, you know, in that sense, it's that, you know, it's like getting called into the principal's office, like, and you know, you did it. And it's like, you know, I'm just going to put my hand over my mouth because I'm just going to get more trouble if I open it. And so it's one of those confounding stories where you look at it and go, what was the purpose of that? What was the purpose in the pain? And there's so many other underlying things with his friends, and there's a lot there. But it's one of those books that a lot of people struggle with because it's like, it seems like unnecessary pain. Like there should be a purpose to the pain, but unfortunately a lot that we go through, this side of heaven is unnecessary.
Two parts of me. One says, I want to be loyal to everybody I care about, like Job was. And the other part is like, I don't want to be on the radar like Job was. I don't ever want to be chosen.
Don't choose somebody else. Okay. I promise I'll do really well, but just pick somebody else. Yeah, skip
exactly.
me. Exactly. Yeah, no. But yeah, we went from delegation to Job.
What the heck? I do that to you though. Curveball, curveball, curveball.
No, it was good.
But I watch you as you transcend us back to what we started talking about.
No, it was good. And I think in this season for you, learning to discern the delegation and all that is going to be huge for you to be able to have the freedom that you guys want to have, to be able to be on the road and know that the studio is still pumping, and be on the road and know that Youngstown Computer is still going, and, you know, get to explore with your family. I think it's going to be a really fun season the next 5 years for you.
What one thing that has been off the charts, like different, that I didn't do anything about, it just kind of came as a gift somewhere in the night, is anxiety. Like there would be worry that would happen that when there was an unknown or it was out of my control or somebody else was in charge of it. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I'd worry, and I would like want to step in and make everything right, because I didn't want anybody to get hurt. And I don't worry like that anymore. And it was sort of like a couple of instances where like, I'm not going to worry and see how this goes. And it went okay. And I was like, well, that's because it didn't go bad. If it would have went bad, then you would have been justified. It sounds better. See a theme going here.
Yeah.
And then it did go bad. I'm like, you know what? They're going to take care of it because I'm not going to intercede. They're going to learn how to do it on their own. Mm-hmm. And they made it better on their own. Like, oh, there was some, I infused that there's me in there, but I didn't have to be there physically.
What's you know, for me with preaching, so I preach 40 to 50 times a year. I'm in the pulpit almost every week. And over these last couple of years, God's been sending us these leaders that want to learn to preach and speak and do that. You know, you mentioned, you know, Jed preaching this last weekend. You know, I coached him for the last month. We've been going through that message and everything. He, you know, called me the other day. He's like, hey, he's like, everybody's telling me it was a great message. Like, how can I be better? What did I miss? What did I swing and miss on? What was confusing? And we had a great conversation. He's always hungry, trying to improve himself. But I spent the whole month of August last year, and we had five different preachers. Two of which had never preached on a Sunday morning. One was Jed's first sermon, and Natalie, and you know, I coached all of them. But I'll tell you what, I was so anxious on that Sunday morning where they're preaching, and I'm, you know, I'm trying. Nobody would know that. I know that because I'm back in my office, and then I'm sitting there, and I have no control with what they're about to do or say. What do I have to clean up afterwards? You know, all of that. And each time it went well. And so this time around, like, you know, I was sitting on the front row. My wife's making fun of me because I have his notes. So I'm reading through his notes as he's going. So I know when he's deviating and stuff. She's like, are you seriously? I'm like, I do this every time. And it's one of the ways that my anxiety in that moment, because I'm like, all right, I know what's coming, so I can anticipate. But, you know, I heard it said this way: someone endured my bad preaching so the church can think I'm a good preacher. There was someone that took a chance on me and sat on the front row and said, let that young kid give it a shot. And I'm sure I preached heresy and used too many times and all of that. But, you know, thank God for people like that. And so if I can turn around and do that for somebody else, even if I have to overcome my own anxiety by scribbling through their notes as they're preaching,
whatever it takes.
Bro. Right. So it's good. It's good. Well, we're cooking with grease today.
Heck yeah,
we appreciate you listening. We'll see you back here on Thursday.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing.